Good morning, everyone, and may we invite you to take a look at this little pamphlet called the ULG pamphlet. Welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. For newcomers, you find this little pamphlet in the library, on the book table, and also on the table as you enter. Please take notice that it has four pages, and each page is worth more than its weight in gold in terms of what is written there for the public and for visitors alike. Briefly, then, we will begin with a statement of the policy of this lodge. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. Without professing attachment to any theosophical organization, it is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood, it holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. Now, it regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, or creed, or sex, or condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves by study, and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Following that paragraph on this little declaration, you will find another little paragraph. It says that the form signed by Associates of the United Lodge of Theosophists says, being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge, as set forth in its declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. And many determine to participate by standing here on the platform and reading out the declaration and giving announcements. That alone requires courage that we all thought we had until we stand here and make every effort. It's the effort what counts. You will see a list of 28 lodges all over the world, different countries, individuals such as we are, but the basis for our unity was just read. Now, we have a meeting this morning, began at 11, it's over at 1. December.
Noon.
Noon, pardon. Head of myself. And actually, the topic for December, cycles in cyclic law. And this morning, working with the law of cycles. So we will hear a discussion and a talk this morning in reference to that. And of course, naturally, the rest of the month will be taken up with the general topic, cycles in cyclic law. Wednesdays, the doors here open at 5:30, so you can spend a couple hours in the library, which is at the front of the building. In the library, you will find a welcomer, one of those who desire to help, and he will meet you, or she, and describe to you what you may find in that library, mostly straight line theosophical literature and lots of other books supporting or otherwise. At 7:30, the library closes, but you have 15 minutes to examine the books on the book table if you wish to purchase some literature. Not very expensive at all. Because the work here in this lodge is supported by voluntary contributions, as you see, time, and of course, money or donations. If you wish to participate in any way, please consult with the volunteer associate at the desk, either during library hours or before or after meetings. We have a reading this morning for you, but before we begin, we would like to say that on the pages of this little pamphlet, it's a good idea after a meeting, or even when you go home and say, I attended lodge today, take a look and read. This will last for October, November, and December, but you will find that the readings on this little pamphlet, the more you read them, the more comes out of them. This morning, before we begin, we'll give you a little selection, and the selection was taken from the Bhagavad Gita, one of our most famous references, you might say. And here, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. I myself never was not, nor thou, nor all the princes of the earth, nor shall we ever hereafter cease to be. As the Lord of this mortal frame experiences therein infancy, youth, and old age, so in future incarnations it will meet the same. One who's confirmed in this belief is not disturbed by anything that may come to pass. The truly devoted for the purification of the heart perform actions with their bodies, their minds, and their understanding, and their senses. Putting away all self-interest, the man who is devoted and not attached to the fruit of his action obtains tranquility. Again, the title for today is Working with the Law of Cycles.
Thank you. Our title implies that there is a fixed law and that we are able to move with it of our own accord. And we're told this subject, the law of cycles, and how we interact with it is a very important one in the philosophy because it gives us ideas about how we can actually change our lives and make life better for ourselves and those around us. The word cycle from the Greek means ring. But if we think of a ring in this sense, it's not a single starting point and returning to the same point at the end. Rather, we're given the idea of a thread, the threads of a screw, where it's a spiraling and we start at the beginning, turning on itself and moving upward. This is the perfect explanation of evolution, according to theosophy. So cycle is the word chosen to define the law of periodicity, which rules the universe. There is ever a coming and a going, a movement, a turning to all of life. And this law rules in every department of the universe. From the highest, we were thinking about Plato, we heard about recently, and Hermes and philosophers of that age often invited us to look at universals first and then work our way down to where we find ourselves. So we thought we'd take that approach. Evolution then proceeds from spirit and returns to spirit when the cycle has ended with the experience and the knowledge gained. So it is at a higher pitch at the end of that spiral. We have cycles of universes, solar systems, worlds, planets, and we're just beginning to be able to quantify those as science gets better instruments and explores in different ways than it was able to thus far. We have cycles of nature. We know there were kingdoms of animals long ago. We know when the first sands formed as sunlight heated the mineral kingdom, when dinosaurs roamed and creatures of the sea that we can no longer find swam the waters. We have evidence of those. These were cycles, these were periods, periodicity. We had cycles of vegetation that fed those creatures that we no longer have. Things are extinct these days. Well, theosophy says they go out for a period and they'll return in the proper period. There were cycles when animals ran freely over the earth, not yet becoming domesticated by us. There were cycles when, finally, man incarnated to help all the kingdoms evolve and move forward on the spiral of life. The intelligence was there all along, and finally at the point where mind meets matter and spirit, man incarnates. And then we had cycles of ancient civilizations where knowledge had to be buried and protected, where mystery schools met in secret at the price of their lives, if found. Cycles where we have evidence of great civilizations which rise, leave their mark, and fall, moving on. And then we find ourselves in the midst of a cycle of evolution where all of that knowledge is our birthright, free, without threat, without dogma, where the comforts of our everyday lives allow us the time and consideration of these ideas, the spiral turning age by age. But how does that affect us all? How does it help us? How does this make our lives any better? Well, Mr. Judge tells us cyclic law is the supreme law governing our evolution, and reincarnation is cyclic law in operation and is supreme. So the opportunity to learn about and work with these cycles comes with every single lifetime. The first thing that we have to learn is to perceive in everything and every circumstance the rule of law, the reign of law. We recognize it in certain ways, but not completely. Something happens that we say it's good or it's bad. We don't recognize the same law is operating in both. The effects that we feel, we call good or bad. We mistake our own nature, and by the very power of that nature, we set in motion causes that must produce their effects. That cause and effect, that motion of action, is the Sanskrit word karma. All of that is contained in one word from an ancient language, and it's a word we commonly use these days, although we apply it very differently. It's my karma to do this or it's my karma to do that, as if it's something outside of me. Well, that's what the whole point is today, to learn that it is not outside ourselves, that the rule of law is, begins with, and resides within our very selves. So these circumstances we feel are our conscious experiences, the nature of our actions, and it is our method of gaining firsthand knowledge. We are living in a world of self-created circumstances, but we have yet to realize the rule of law is within ourselves. So we understand cycles are returns of impressions. Well, what does that mean? Are we impressing something or someone? Theosophy says all the time, at every moment. Why? Because we think, feel, and act in a particular direction. That is an impression. We set it. It's like a wave. We throw a pebble into a pond. We create a ripple. The ripple goes out, but it returns. And it continues to return until finally balance is restored. The universe acts in exactly the same way. It is ruled in exactly the same way. So what we need to do is begin to see the cause in the effect. And if the effect is wrong, we have to learn to readjust the causes or how we are acting in nature, with nature. We need to check our perceptions and our attitude towards all events. Again, if we consider this a personal something that we don't possibly deserve, something is wrong with our thinking. If we go back to universals, and balance is the law of the universe, harmony is restored. If there is an out of balance, there is simply something needed to set it right again. Here's the really powerful thing. If we are the creators of everything we reap, then we have the power to change them. Theosophy says we are spiritual and powerful and electric and magnetic dynamos. We are not these bodies and these human forms that we see. We are much, much more than that. So we go on what we rely upon. Well, what is it we're holding to be true? Are we hampered by our circumstances and our surroundings? Maybe to a certain degree, but who set them up? We did. Can we change them? Absolutely. And as was said earlier, was the perfect opening to this statement, it does require an immortal courage to have an immortal point of view. And to hold it while watching and guiding the lower forces in unity for the self of all. The spiritual will cannot act so long as there is any selfishness in the action or the desire for its results, as we heard in our reading. So, how do we check what our desires are? Well, logically, cause and effect, look at the results. Was the result what we expected? Was there an expectation involved? The motive needs to be checked. Was the result something completely different from what we thought would happen? Again, there was something wrong in the cause, in the logic of what we thought. If the result was one which was harmonious and caused no harm, then we acted in the right way. And we know that that has been learned. And now we need to learn the next thing. We don't have to worry. It will be knocking at our door. We set it into motion. It will be ready for us when we are ready to do the work on it. We don't have to seek these lessons. They come to us under law. All the powers that exist or can exist are latent, however ill-expressed, in the spiritual nature. So we don't need to look outside for how to do this work. We need to instead turn within. Theosophy tells us the universe proceeds from within outwards, and at the end of the cycle returns within. So if we trust that, if universals lead to particulars, as above, so below, there must be a font of spiritual knowledge and power within each and every one of us that we need to seek, learn to use better with these instruments we've become so enamored with, and honor in the sense by which we express them. We're told the will is consciousness in action, but as we heard, the will is fueled by desire. So what is most necessary is a proper basis of thinking and feeling. Our desires are fueled by what we think and what we believe. Who's in charge of that? Us, no one else. Those storehouses of thoughts that we've been gathering since childhood. There are file cabinets upon file cabinets of beliefs that were handed to us. Okay, I'll take it, I'll file it away, I'll believe that until I find out differently. Well, until you do begin to look at them and see if they're real and true, they remain as part of these actions that we set into motion, these causes. We need to begin to undust that knowledge and study it and learn to discern the real from the false. It comes with practice, it comes with effort, and Theosophy promises us no effort is lost. So the real and true will is the spiritual will. And it says, it flies like light and cuts all obstacles like a sharp sword. This we have within us, each and every one of us. It is that will proceeding from the highest spiritual part of our natures which causes man to be an evolution from within outwards through all forms of substance. Well, where do we look for guides as to how to do all this? There are cycles of avatars, of sages, of wise beings. As we know, those mystery schools were held in secret. There were those seekers of this wisdom that at the peril of life went anyway and studied at the feet of the wise ones. There is ever an impulsion towards perfecting oneself. It's the nature of the universe. That evolution is always moving forward, moving up, turning up towards truth. So if we fire up that in us which seeks to do better, give it energy, give it life, give it focus, and read and learn what the ones before us who already did this work have left for us, we know we're walking the right path, we're moving in the right direction. We certainly can't go from point A, where we are now, to point Z, which is the perfectibility of this period, overnight. Nothing in the universe happens that way. It is small, deliberate efforts, movements toward doing better. First, doing better for ourselves, to better fit ourselves, to help others, and then doing better for others. And it's all in that desire. Is this selfish? Will this just benefit me? Or am I doing this so that I can be more of a benefit to others? And then as we work with the law of harmony, of cycles, of balance, we get the boost of nature. And we're going to hear more about that. We don't want to tread on the end of year talks because we're going to hear specifics about a vow and a resolution and the time of year, that wonderful time of year we find ourselves. But know that there is a cycle in nature where all of this energy rises and we are available to take advantage of it as we see fit. So nature wants us to succeed as much as we would like to. So if we see that law rules and that law is inherent in our highest nature, not outside of us, we shall see that it is the spirit in us, our very self, that is the cause and sustainer of all actions. And this spirit, by its very power as the highest, through false ideas, creates for itself false positions and false destinies. And then we need to look at three great ideas, which are part of our very nature. There is creation, preservation, and destruction or regeneration. And at any moment we decide, we can take what we have created, which has suited us for a while, we've preserved it, and decide to put it down, destroy it, and move to something better. We have the power to do that. And again, as we do that under law, we get the benefit of life's energy with us. And all we can do is our best at any given time. Yes.
During the talk, it was mentioned that the common conception of karma is that of fate. And there is a word in Islam, kismet, which is that. It is fate. But isn't that only a small part? I mean, eventually karma can become fate because of choices we've made in the past, mm-hmm. correct? But it's but it's not really, that's only very a limited concept, isn't it?
Absolutely. Fate in the sense that what we have created must return to us. We are fated to receive the effects of the causes we set into motion. But that doesn't have to be a bad thing. That is an opportunity. Because any time we do something out of line with what should be done, or wrong, or in the wrong direction, we have the opportunity to correct it. So we are fated to receive the results of what we have put into motion, but we are destined through our own efforts to do that better and have a better result.
Just a quick follow-up.
Sure.
So we always have free choice, and even if we're getting the results of past choices, doesn't our current attitude have an awful lot to do with how it's really going to affect us?
Absolutely. Attitude, we think, is everything. And that is perception, isn't it? How we perceive the world. We know ourselves when we're feeling at our very most sorry for ourselves about something. The universe is kind enough to offer up a handicapped person walking by or someone in desperate need of help. And it's a snap back into reality. You are not in a low position. You are in a position to be of service. Here is someone who truly needs help. So perception is everything, for sure. There was a hand in the middle. Or, go ahead.
I'm curious, in terms of the karma, is it dictated strictly by actions or also thoughts?
Is karma dictated strictly by actions or also thoughts? It's a wonderful question. Karma is cause and effect. So do we have an effect by what we think? Do we put an effect out by what we feel? Do we put an effect out by our motive? What do you think?
Yes.
Absolutely. So everything, action is the end result, shall we say. Everything begins in the mind. We are mind beings. We are thinkers. So the thoughts we hold, the feelings we color those thoughts with, the motive we put behind all of that, leads to an action, and all of that coloring is what we see in the results. So yes, our thoughts, the Asvi says our thoughts are the most important thing to begin with, to start to evaluate. As a scientist, is this true? Does this hold? Is this universal? Does it include all of life? Is it selfish? We can begin to ask ourselves very simple questions, and all of a sudden, personal salvation, that can't be possible unless it's ourselves doing it. Yes?
The principle that a cycle, when it returns, would be at a little bit higher level, although in another phase of evolution it could be lower, mm-hmm. but it's generally higher level moving forward. So that would mean that the impressions that we set up, when they come back to us, they may not be exactly the same. They may be a little bit higher, or a little bit stronger, a little different because of all the other impressions that we put out that come back with it and push it forward.
Absolutely. Mr. Judge, in one of his writings, talks about those who have the blues. And we think that's a common experience for most of mankind, that on the days where you're feeling down, or you are feeling out of sorts, or you're not yourself, we say, I don't feel like myself today, that if we just for a moment can step outside that and begin to understand, this is something I'm experiencing, but I am a spiritual being with power over what I think and feel, and life itself will offer me better choices, and I have the opportunity to take them when the cycle returns, guess what? That impression is mixed into it. So we may get the blues again, and these things happen in cycles. We're told to start looking at and journal our lives and watch the repetitiveness of our nature, our feelings in particular. But when that cycle returns, it will also have that spiritual awareness for the moment mixed into it. And if we do this enough, we catch it sooner and infuse it with a higher idea. I can withstand all of this because I created it. I can act better and think better. The more often we do that and the sooner we do it, eventually the cycle turns into an uplifting one. So again, we're in charge. Yes?
So therefore our only reality is in this very moment, that this is where the universe is created, and this is where everything exists. It's right here and now. So that refers us back to the thing to the Gita, being single-minded and not looking for the results or the rewards of one's actions,
exactly,
but ever giving it up to the higher that we know, which is all of humanity.
It's such an eternal concept, and we can't get our minds around it, but we are it. The idea that now is all there is. Well, I want to do that in the future. The future has just become now. Now has just become the past. But again, every moment that we are aware is now. There is no future. There is no past. There is eternally now to the conscious thinker, whether he's awake or asleep or whatever condition he may be in, he's experiencing now. And when we say he, we mean he or she. So it's waking up to that fact that we have this moment to change, to do better, is an essential component of this. I'll save that for the future. There is no future, there is now. And the sooner we get busy and get to this work that we have set up for ourselves, the sooner we can get rid of that and move on to the next thing. Because over lifetimes of reincarnation, years and years and cycles and eons, we have built up plenty of causes and must reap those effects. But we also have the opportunity then to do even better. Yes, in the back.
Is there ever an opportunity to examine the karma that comes to us? Or should we in the beginning just change our mind to do better without actually understanding the problem?
Absolutely. Examining it. Who is it that said a well-examined life is not worth living? I forget which philosopher. Unexamined life. Thank you. Sorry. Let's go back in the past for a moment. An unexamined life is not worth living. That's exactly the point. That the first step then is to look at the conditions in which we find ourselves. Detach from whether they're good or bad or healthy or ill or what I wanted or what I didn't work. Try and look as the observer, the impersonal observer. Examine where we find ourselves. And in that, we will see what needs to be done, the duty that comes to us because it is natural and under law. Yes.
Well, when Plato was repeating his teacher, Socrates, on that statement, the unexamined life, not worth living, when he examined things, he always examined them from universals, what he called the noumena. So it's not just examining our lives from our own particular likes and dislikes and ambitions, but trying to get the larger perspective universal truths and use them to weigh our lives.
Yes. The universal truths are our guidelines, and Theosophy offers three of them. We've heard often the three fundamentals. This is the second, the law of periodicity. The first being that, as we said, we are that spiritual essence within all of life. We are a spark or a reflection of that divine. And the third being evolution, this process of turning and returning and moving through the scale of development. If we begin with those ideas and see how our current situation fits into those, we are perhaps on a better beginning path. Thank you. In the back? No? Okay.
Well, we could say the well-examined life, if we're not examining ourselves, but we're well-examining others and their motives, we're well-examining opportunities to bend maybe laws and things like that, then that's not worth living, it's
true.
In a sense. But we need to well examine our own selves.
True, and that brings up a point that we didn't mention, that first of all, judging in any form another is completely ridiculous if we think about it. We can't even often find the cause of our own difficulties, and we know we're in a certain phase of mind at any given moment. How could we possibly imagine what another is going through? Perhaps offer them the highest motive that you can. Perhaps in the midst of an argument, put the face of someone you really love on the other and think how you might treat them. But the point being that there is absolute justice. The law of laws, this karma, this balance of life, means whatever is set forth we will feel its return. So we don't have to worry about another being punished or being exalted or whatever condition they're in for the moment in that now. The universe will have its balance. So if we have circumstances which we find particularly difficult to swallow and we can't figure out why they're coming to us, be sure we set something into motion in another lifetime that caused the same effect perhaps for another. We can't know because we can't go to those previous lifetimes, but if it comes to us, it is a balancing. It's all in how we react to it, what it will be going forward. But absolute justice being that eventually everything that's put forward will have its return. We don't need to be concerned about anyone but ourselves. Yes.
You had said earlier, stuck with me, heard it, that the confusion between what happens outside, fate, and what happens inside us, karma, as a result of past acts. I can accept this. I think people here can, for the most part, accept this, but still there's an awareness that I think that there are some things that seem to be by chance, external things. And it's troubling when it becomes tragic, such as the plane accident in Arizona a couple of weeks ago where six people were killed, three children, three adults, a pilot. I mean, this seemed at first glance to be a man, if people in the wrong place at the wrong time. Is that just a superficial way of looking at it?
Well, I wouldn't say it's superficial. Theosophy posits the question, are we living in a universe of law, or are we living in a universe of chaos or chance? It can't be both. It has to be either everything is happening under law, or there is no law and everything happens by chance. So if we can prove scientifically, and that's where the idea came to us in the time that we're living now, cause and effect. Science proved for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. So we have proved that for ourselves. That being the case, everything we can think of should be able to fit under that. Now, if everything that comes to us is under law, on the face of it, any tragedy seems to us unimaginable. It can't possibly be what should be reaped by someone, but it must. And it is perhaps the sacrifice of one for an unknown reason to us, whether it's a death by an airplane accident in this example, and there were children involved, we heard, or it's a chronic illness by one in a family. There could be the possibility that one or more of those souls are sacrificing themselves in order that others may learn. Perhaps others in that family need to learn compassion or need to learn to look at life differently. This is the method by which it will happen. Children, we know, come back very, very quickly. Theosophy says not until the age of 7, which society calls the age of reason, where a child starts to take responsibility for its actions. Not until the age of 7 really does karma apply. Up until that point, the soul is still gathering what it needs for the lifetime. So if a child was very young and was taken from this life, we can be sure that soul will have an opportunity to come back quickly. From that point forward, karma adheres. But whatever the length of life for any given soul, there is a period of time in the states after death, and then there is a return to life in a new form or a new body. So although it's very difficult for us to see the reason and the sense and the logic in great disasters, whether they're small or great, they're still disasters to us, there is the rule of law. We have proved it. So those souls are reaping this result in this lifetime, but have perchance cleaned a whole series of karmic lessons that needed to be learned, and will return and do more work. Some ideas. Yes, come on. There's a purpose in evolution, absolutely. Gentlemen?
Yeah, I'm puzzled by the assertion that it is obvious that you either have rule of law or chance. From a scientific point of view, this is not proof to be the case. You can have highly reproducible results based on chance. The fact that chance is in fact operating, and I'll give a specific example that I have in mind. If I remember a theological student who started out with the assumption that our understanding of things goes from the crystalline solid, and as things become more and more confused, it becomes a liquid, becomes less ordered, and as you go from the liquid to a gas, it becomes even more disordered. And our ability to understand these different states goes from the perfect in the solid to the totally imperfect in the gas. Well, the point is our ability to understand things and to predict results from situations or circumstances, it turns out the perfect crystal can be understood. The gas can be readily understood, as it so happens, for exactly the opposite reason. The perfect disorder can be understood and to produce very clear results. In other words, there are laws, gas laws, for example, predict very clearly what the pressure of and temperature of things will be and what will happen at these different temperatures and pressures. But they work best because they are random. The thing that's most difficult to understand is the thing in the middle, the liquid, where things are partially ordered and partially disordered, and it's these mixtures that lead to the infusion. So when you posit it's this law, the universe is based on law, or the universe is based on chance, as if these are opposite extremes.
Mm-hmm. What we would offer is the first consideration that comes to mind is that water will take the shape of whatever it is poured into. So there is some intelligent action there. It doesn't lay horizontally. If it's in a container, it will drop vertically. It's under the law of gravity. One of the things we didn't go into in this meeting, which we study often in these rooms, is the sevenfold nature of the universe. And we are all of those states that was mentioned. The gaseous we can liken to the astral kingdom, the kingdom of the design forms or the auric bodies. The water is so much a part of our nature that it's mostly what this form is made up of, equally what the earth is made up of. There is the solid, the physical. There is the energetic state that works through all of the conditions expressed in your question. There is energy moving in different visible conditions. But then there is the invisible side of nature that science is just beginning to be able to quantify. The first time we were able to take a photograph of the light field around a plant, science was turned on its head, and this was back in the 60s. Curly in photography, someone was able to capture with the right instrument and the qualities of silver and photograph and so forth, the outline around the physical form. Well, there is also within us the power of sight, the power of our senses. There is within us mind and the ability to choose. There is within us something higher we call conscience, which Theosophy says is the vehicle or the spiritual soul, the container for spirit, the all unconditioned divine spirit. So all of the states that you mentioned are states of matter, as we're looking at it, under law, acting in their kingdoms, is the only way I can express that. And maybe we have some other thoughts. Your hand is up.
Yeah, with respect to the previous comment and the whole airplane thing, when the ancients looked up to the sky and tried to assess what's going on in the universe and the rotations of the planets, what's going on in the solar system, they were able to systematize that through use of mathematics. And from mathematics came astronomy. You couldn't have astronomy without mathematics. And they realized, we all realized at some point in one of our past lives, that things proceed according to an orderly fashion, and the solar system is representative of that. It's a representative symbol of that. But that solar system that we see, we come to realize that it follows a certain system, not because the physical planets do what physical planets or decide that they're going to do that, but there are invisible forces behind those physical planets. And if we maintain a philosophical life, understand that everything occurs according to law, if we've generally proved that to ourselves, then when certain tragedies occur, hold on to your philosophy of life. It must have happened under law. There's no more possibility of an accident, therefore, than there is of a miracle. And so look for the purpose for the tragedy. Yes, Martin Luther King was assassinated. That's a tragedy. But look for the purpose in it. Why? You know, look, there's good things came from that. But with respect to, you know, then if we just purely look at the physical scientist, the chemist, he can do these reactions, and there's always going to be an aberrant outcome out of a certain number of hundreds or thousands of reactions. There's predictably going to be a certain number of aberrant outcomes, and which we understand physical. We understand physical scientists are reluctant to use the words cause and effect when they're doing these experiments, but rather correlation. Usually when I do this and this, there's a correlation of what the outcome's going to be, but they don't say cause and effect typically. That's our understanding. And that could be because they're only looking at the physical side of the physical departments of nature rather than other forces that are unseen behind it that cause the aberrant reactions.
Absolutely. In the center?
Just to give an example of the problem, how it can be viewed, any one of us could go into a room and start spouting out a series of words which to the perceivers around us might not seem to make any sense, chaotic. Yet we predetermined before we went in there that we were going to recite every 1/3, 5th, 7th and repeat that cycle of Hamlet's sequilically. You know, just repeating the in that sequence. Now, to the observers, it makes no sense. But from the inner point of view, the hidden point of view, it makes perfect sense, and there is a cause for the apparent randomness. And we think that that's what the point was made. What appears to be chaotic and random to the scientists, because they're looking at the effects, to those who understand the interior causes, the invisible causes that lead up to it, it's not random, but it's the operation of law.
Thank you.
And that makes sense, because today we have these huge gambling casinos. Everybody says they're going to take a chance. Without realizing behind the scene, you have some extremely brilliant mathematicians who already know
the house always wins.
How to set it up so that you think that,
exactly.
Oh, I take my chance now. But behind the scenes, it's the law of mathematics.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A tool we can use, I think, is to realize, okay, that there is a universal oneness and there is eternal moment now. And when we look at this, then each one of us is exactly who we're supposed to be. Cannot not be. And although we may not understand these things, there may not be a reason for us to understand them right now. However, if we want to, we have each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because each other brought us,
yes,
to this place. So when we look at it from the viewpoint, each one of us brought us to the place where we're at, and we don't understand these things. We do have to have that immortal courage, and part of the thing I think that blocks that is our own fear. So if we look at our own fear, which is okay, because people don't like to look at fear, you know, because they fear of loss, have somebody think of me, or what happened, so on and so forth. We just stop and take a thought and say, well, what is this fear? Let me take a look at it. I'm not supposed to understand everything right now. Who is there to help? How can I get help? As opposed to keeping ourselves locked in that place.
Absolutely.
And just look at each other and have all the answers.
And Theosophy says we are constantly impressing others and being impressed by others.
But ultimately, we have to do the work ourselves.
I'm sorry?
Ultimately, we have to do the work ourselves.
Ultimately, we have to do the work ourselves. Absolutely.
Well, can't really speak for anyone else in this room, but it seems like most of my life has been random. I make plans, and I've even studied for years and years to enter a field, and then as soon as I got the degree, the field basically disappeared. rug was pulled out. It doesn't, nobody.
So you gained knowledge.
Yes, so what I'm saying is that, it's like things appear random, but that's because I'm lacking in knowledge. And perhaps, you know, I should have taken a minor concentration so that I could have entered that field.
So you have studied the results and realized there might be a change in your direction in the future, and you have made that choice. And one of the things from a previous comment about the airline crash, there may have been a soul who at the last moment decided not to get on the plane. That too is underlined. We know, we've heard those stories. Something told me not to travel today. It wasn't the time and place for that soul to be involved in that event. So although sometimes we're taken out of our comfort zone where we think we should be heading, at other times under the exact same rule of law, we are mercifully taken out of circumstances we shouldn't be involved in. Yes.
For practical purposes, if we come, these events come at us, as everybody says, well, apparently randomly, but we can spend lots of time trying to figure out why am I in this misfortune? I mean, what is the cycle that caused me to, these people to have the plane accident, or me to have this misfortune? We don't know, because there are so many, many, many variables. We lose sight of why this is happening to us, which most of the time is that we need to take make a different direction. Mm-hmm. It's a wake-up call for something that, it's not why did this happen to me, mm-hmm. but what do I do with it?
What do I have to learn from it? Exactly.
And that is what karma is really all about, I think.
It's an opportunity then, absolutely.
We just wanted to say that that which we are prevented from doing, which our human will was so concentrated on, could have been the worst possible
absolutely.
Thing. And if I had entered that field, I don't think I would have been happy anyway.
So nature assists. One last comment.
But Buddha said the great law of the universe is compassion.
Great love.
And for us to be compassionate, for us to have our heart open, we have to look at what we are attached to, why we cannot free ourselves from the bonds,
absolutely.
The chains that we have made for ourselves.
Absolutely. The law of laws is compassion. And that is the expression of this balance. If we can look on circumstances and people and events compassionately, it takes on a whole different meaning and feeling. And we'll leave you with this idea. All we have to do, small thing, is to realize our own real nature, what our defects are, strengthen our virtues, and move on. Just so surely as we do this, we will find our virtues and strength increase and our defects gradually fall away. So move on. Meeting adjourned.